Good afternoon. Our next case is the United States of America versus Jason Kane, number 25-2721. Mr. Zosmer.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the court. Robert Zosmer on behalf of the government. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, we're here based on a mistake, respectfully, that was made by the district court in mischaracterizing the initial warrant, and the mistakes cascade from there. There was a state search warrant to search for evidence of crimes that Mr. Kane was charged with, which was indecent exposure and other related offenses against two victims. What happened here was really elemental police procedure. The police did a very quick, very thorough investigation, identified evidence of indecent exposure to these two young children, and at the same time went to the same magistrate, obtained a arrest warrant for Mr. Kane for those offenses, and a search warrant to search his home for further evidence of those offenses. It's pretty much undisputed that there was probable cause to search for evidence of those crimes that were articulated in the affidavit. The mistake here that the district court made was viewing that warrant as a search for something else, which was child pornography. It was not. There's no fair reading of this warrant that would say that. And then from there, the court concludes there was no probable cause of that, concludes that the trooper was grossly negligent in seeking this warrant that she didn't actually seek, and suppresses all of the evidence against this, you know, very, very serious offender. And we respectfully ask the court to reverse that decision. The evidence here that this warrant was a search for indecent exposure is made most clear by the second warrant. What that's also made most clear by the second warrant as our alternative basis for relief is the good faith exception. The trooper Price and her colleagues went to serve the arrest warrant and the search warrant. They observed this very additional disturbing behavior. I assume your honors, of course, have read the record and are familiar, so I won't get into the detail, but what they saw clearly suggested that Mr. Kane was viewing child pornography on his computer at the time that they arrived.
So let me stop you there, because so we're familiar with the behavior that they observed. The district court said that it demonstrated that it was an adult male masturbating in front of a computer at his home. I think perhaps one can go farther and say, well, it was an adult male masturbating to something on a computer screen that he did not want his wife to see, right? He was tracking his wife's location, and he ejected the device from the computer. But why should we go from there to he was viewing child pornography as opposed to the many other disturbing or embarrassing things that one might view on a computer screen?
Well, yeah, we will get into the details, Your Honor. First of all, it is established, and they know from the earlier investigation, that this man has a sexual interest in children. He exposes himself to this 6 and 9-year-old, and he's aroused. He has an erection when he does that in front of children who are clothed, but he is not. We know he has a sexual interest in children, and that's the basis of the arrest warrant and the search warrant. They go to the home, they knock on the door. It's many minutes before he answers the door. When he answers the door, he hasn't taken any steps to conceal what he was doing. All the visual evidence of the fact he was masturbating is there for all to see. What he has done instead is taken the time to eject this hard drive, which is encrypted. It's improperly ejected to this day. Authorities have not been able to access what's on that hard drive. And what we're dealing with here in the context of a search warrant is probable cause. We're dealing with probabilities, what the Supreme Court in Gates called common sense, a common sense appraisal. So that's the standard, not is this preponderance of the evidence beyond a reasonable doubt, though I would suggest we're probably pretty far up there as well. When you look at all of these facts of his sexual interest, of the activity he's involved in, remember also that the children reported that when he did expose himself to them and heard his wife coming home, he ran to conceal what he was doing. Put all that together, and it is at minimum a reasonable, probable assumption that he's looking at illegal pornography as opposed to adult pornography that anyone could look at. And of course, we have to give deference to the magistrate judge's conclusion. It was the magistrate in approving the second warrant who reaches the conclusion that I'm articulating.
So I guess that would be a question that I have for you, because I thought I heard you say at the beginning of your argument, you were trying to make the distinction that the first warrant was not on the grounds that they were trying to look for child pornography. If it had been, would you think that warrant would have been improperly granted?
No, Your Honor, I don't. I don't know that the court has to get there, but we did have a section of our opening brief in which we explain why you could have a warrant for child pornography based on what they knew at that point, even though I'm now arguing in a counterfactual world because that's not what Trooper Price was doing. But we did explain that the defense hasn't addressed that. It is an alternative ground. But no, what's really clear in getting back to the second warrant, if I may, is that when Trooper Price saw what she saw that I've just described, it's so notable that she went and got a second warrant. And the second warrant is distinctly different from the first one. And this is what the district court overlooked. The first warrant is identical to the arrest warrant in seeking evidence of the crimes that they're charging him with at that time, which is indecent exposure. She goes back for a second warrant and adds an entire additional page to ask for authority to search for evidence of child pornography, the state offense called sexual abuse of children, which is the state's child pornography statute. That, number one, shows exactly what her mindset was as the first warrant, that it was not a warrant for child pornography. Number two, you couldn't have a more manifest display of good faith, which would be the alternate basis to reverse the district court's judgment. This is a trooper who is doing everything by the book. She has authority at the time they go in on October 20th. She has authority to seize the electronic devices and open them up and start looking through them. And she doesn't. Instead, when she realizes there's evidence of an additional crime that was not articulated in the first warrant, she gets a second warrant before they do any search whatsoever. I've been doing this for a long time. It's hard to see a clearer instance of good faith than the manner in which the state police and then later the FBI handled this investigation step by step.
Setting aside the good faith for a moment, and just on the probable cause for the second warrant, is the government's argument that everything that was in the first warrant established, or the first affidavit, established that Mr. Kane is sexually aroused by children to the point of getting erections, and therefore, by the time the second affidavit came around, it was clear that because he is someone who becomes sexually aroused by children and had an erection while looking at something on a screen, it is probable that the thing on his screen was child pornography?
Yes, that's essentially what I've said.
But how is that consistent with the statement in the first affidavit that says that he could be using, and I think the government's position that the first affidavit and the first warrant were looking for lawful images of children, non-pornographic images of children that individuals who have a sexual interest in children use nonetheless for sexual gratification?
So, Your Honor, the first warrant is not necessarily limited to non-pornographic images. What it's limited to is two victims. It's limited to victims one and two. And what the warrant says, and this is really important, I appreciate your focusing me on this. What the first warrant says is your affiant believes there may be photographs and or videos of victim one and two on these aforementioned devices. That's page 50 of the appendix. What they're looking for is any evidence that corroborates what the children have reported and that illumines what the relationship is, what's going on in that house between Mr. Kane and victims one and two. That may be, and in fact, it turned out to be pornographic as well as non-pornographic images that were revealed by the search. That's what they're looking for. When she then realizes there may be separate child pornography, which is on the computer, that's what's so telling here is that the second warrant says, this is page 60, same words, your affiant believes there may be photographs and videos of victims one and two, and then adds, and other minors whose identities are not known to police, as well as sexually explicit images of children. You have step-by-step progress.
What
here.
About the interaction that, or what about what the affiant observed during the arrest made her think that he was looking at pornography involving other children as opposed to victims one and two? I mean, why expand the universe of victims at that point?
Based on the knowledge that he has a sexual interest in children, based on the knowledge that he is masturbating in front of his computer, and the fact that he is hiding what he's doing, that it's an encrypted hard drive, that he has the material on, all of this just speaks to illegal pornography, meaning child pornography. But, it's a reasonable assumption.
But again, but even if we were to agree with you, on that, why wouldn't we assume that it's that the victims of the CSAM material are victims one and two, since we know he already has an interest in them?
Because again, we're dealing in probabilities here. And when someone's doing that at the computer, it's very probable that it's not limited to the two children who have recently been in his house, who he has recently exposed himself to. It's probable, and I think the magistrate reads a reasonable conclusion. Let me also say, I'm strongly defending the second warrant, but let me say that the first warrant, if it stands, allowing the search for indecent exposure, and we correct the mistake that's made by the district court in seeing that as a child pornography, then if we're not suppressing the first warrant, then really nothing after that matters. That the police have the authority to search the material, and they are going to see everything that they ultimately saw. What we have instead is a trooper getting two warrants just because she's being so thorough and so careful and making sure that she has judicial approval for the searches that she's going to conduct.
Is that because she was concerned that she would need to look at additional pictures? Like, what would be the new thing she would have been wanting to look at in the second warrant?
Perhaps the, you know, we don't have testimony on that. It's not in the record. I would surmise from looking at this, as the magistrate probably did, that she's just being very, very thorough. Certainly, and what often happens instead is that an officer has authority to search. We know under this court's precedent that having authority to search for victims one and two's photographs would allow you to look at every photograph at least briefly to make sure of what you're looking at. You would then see the material in plain view. She's being better than that. She's making sure that the magistrate at this point knows everything that's in her mind, and getting approval of that.
Basically, what you're saying is that there was all that initial testimony and reporting by the children. That leads to the probable cause to get warrant one, which gets her to the home. And then when she's let into the home, the defendant is at that time doing something that appears suspicious because he delays in answering the door. And then when the door is answered, there's all this evidence of some kind of personal sexual activity near the computer, which she was already had probable cause to search because of trying to make this connection or understand the relationship between the defendant and the children who say they've repeatedly had him indecently expose himself to them.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
In your legal position, what is the relevance, if any, of the contention about the defendant separately texting photos of these children to their parents?
Well, the significance of it is that he is taking photographs of the children. In addition, one of the children reports that he filmed the children with a GoPro camera. So what we know, the reason all of that is important is we know he's photographing these children and videotaping them. And we know that he's using more than one device. And that's what supports the first warrant in seeking multiple devices, because we all know that not only can you use multiple devices, but you can transfer among devices. And so those facts are important for that reason.
And here I know I'm dealing in the counterfactual, but because the district court refers to these as siloed facts and seems to be under the impression that they're unrelated, do you believe there would be probable cause even if there hadn't been the GoPro device and the texting of these non-sexual images of the children to their parents?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you have children who are reporting that he exposed himself to them, they have probable cause to search for evidence of that crime. Photographs that depict what's happening in that house are going to be relevant to show the frequency of contact, the fact that he's there, the degree of interest he has in these children as opposed to other children that we know came to the house. So sure, just those photos alone and the children's report justifies this search. I don't think there's any other way to look at it.
I may have misunderstood Judge Mascott's question, but I thought she was asking if there had not been reports that he had photographed the children and videotaped them with a GoPro camera, would there nonetheless be probable cause to search his devices?
I would say yes. I mean, we're getting into a very counterfactual world here. If all we had was the children reporting that he exposed themselves without any reference to any photographs, then yes, given the predominance of iPhones and photos in the world, yes, the police would have a reason to search his devices for evidence of that relationship. But that's not the case we have.
I mean, it's not the case we have. But, you know, I think the implication of that, I think, are that there would be probable cause to search one's devices for evidence of any crime because people tend to have their phones all the time.
And that is a very interesting issue, as I know Your Honor is aware, that's emerging in many, many cases right now as to the given just the ubiquity of electronic devices. All of us have one in our pocket right now. Given that, is that changing the probable cause analysis with regard to just about anything other than spontaneous criminal activity? I welcome that discussion. I'll probably be standing here one day talking about that. But I don't think today's the day because, you know, we do have just clear, explicit evidence that he was photographing and videotaping these children.
So let's talk for a minute about the breadth of the warrant. We certainly have evidence that he was using a device to send photos to the parents. So most likely a cell phone and a GoPro camera. But this warrant asks for, you know, any and every electronic device, including printers and things like that. So why, on the basis of the first affidavit, which was looking for images of victims one and two, not specifically child pornography, should the warrant have encompassed so many devices?
Because for a couple of reasons. One is, We know there's specifically a GoPro camera, according to the child. We know the photos are texted, but we don't know what camera or phone or device is used for that. So just for starters, you need to search any device that's found that's capable of taking a picture. But in addition to that, we know very clearly, and I think a magistrate can reasonably conclude, that it's very simple and common to transfer images among devices. You save it to a computer, you may save it to even to a printer from which it can be printed. And so it's very standard practice and very appropriate for law enforcement to then look for any device. If they find evidence, great. If they don't, then that's gonna be the end of the matter. But this is not an overbroad warrant in any sense. This warrant specifically authorizes a search for specific crimes. They're looking in the places they need to look.
What about the lack of a temporal limitation?
I think the temporal limitation is clear from the warrant and the affidavit that the children have been there for, I think the report is, one child, while she's now six, it was while she was five and six. If that were an issue, which hasn't been raised, but if that were an issue, that would be an overbreath issue. And the remedy for that would be excluding the evidence that's from outside. It wouldn't condemn the warrant. I don't think we have an overbreath issue based on the evidence that's produced in this case.
I guess I understood the defendants to be making an overbreadth argument, at least with regard to the number of devices. He sort of repeatedly emphasized even printers. I understood that to be an overbreadth argument. And I guess just in terms of like a legal question on overbreadth, do you agree that there's no good faith exception to an overbroad warrant?
There actually is a good faith exception, not only to an overbroad warrant, but to a general warrant as well, which of course is a more serious violation. That this court said that in Fallon, said it in Tracy. I'll let my friend Mr. Goldstein speak for himself. Their main claim here was that this is a general warrant. It's not because of the limitation to a specific crime, and we cite numerous Supreme Court and Third Circuit decisions that have made that clear. Where you are limiting the authorities to search only for evidence of specific crimes, that is not a general warrant. If there is a separate overbreath objection, I would say that's premature at this point because we haven't even gotten to trial yet. The appropriate time for that would be if in discovery we produce exhibits that we say we're going to introduce and there's an argument that it's outside the proper scope of the warrant, that would be the time. But I don't think that's before this court at all. The argument that is before this court is that it's a general warrant, and it's not, because each warrant, as they added offenses, is very clearly limited to those specific offenses. So just to wrap up very quickly, if I may, the government should prevail here. I would respectfully suggest at each stage, there's probable cause for the first warrant for indecent exposure, or there's good faith. There's probable cause for the second warrant, you know, based on the observations, or there's good faith. And we haven't talked about the third and fourth warrants, which of course also rest on good faith as well as attenuation.
Just wait one moment to see if I'm going to check with Judge Phipps to see if he has questions for you.
Yeah, you know, I'm just curious for you to make the case that I think you said it in your statement that all that we really need to address is the sufficiency of the probable cause for the first warrant. Did I hear you correctly? And you want to just tease that out? We don't have to do any downstream cascading from there. We just have to say, yeah, the first warrant's good enough. It was corroboration or other sort of information that we'd be interested in, and then we're done? Or what do you think?
Yes, sir. I think that if this court holds, as we suggest, that there is probable cause for the first warrant, then the subsequent warrants are all sustained as a result. They're all the product of that first search. The judge's reasoning was that they're all fruit of a poisonous tree, of an invalid first warrant. So yes, if this court sustains the first warrant on either probable cause or good faith, everything flows from there. We address the additional arguments as well, you know, as we go step by step.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Zach Goldstein. I represent the appellee, Jason Kane. We are asking the court to affirm the order of the district court granting the motion to suppress. The district court found really the obvious, which is that the first two warrants were both child pornography warrants, even though the first warrant doesn't explicitly say child pornography, that neither warrant contained probable cause to an extent under the court's case law, which is something that wasn't really brought up in the government's argument here, is that, you know, we are not arguing this in a vacuum. We're arguing this with respect to cases that have already been decided. And it's sort of a limited world in terms of Zimmerman, John, Caesar, and there's a more recent unpublished case, I think it's Zima, where this court has repeatedly held that there is no automatic allegations of child abuse of some kind lead to probable cause for child pornography. And that is what the government is essentially asking the court to do. You know, I don't even know that it's essentially. I think they are really explicitly asking the court to do that, and sort of why there is not a mention of case law in the government's argument. You know, Zimmerman is a opinion from this court where the defendant was charged both with, or he was alleged to have abused minors. There were allegations that as part of that abuse, he had shown adult pornography and bestiality videos to at least one, if not more, of the minors. And then the police went and obtained a warrant both for adult pornography and child pornography. This court looked at the warrant in Zimmerman and said, this is clearly, even though it says both, the court looked at it and said, this is clearly a warrant for child pornography. There was no information whatsoever that Zimmerman had ever been in possession of child pornography, had anything to do with child pornography, or anything of that nature. And so there was no automatic child abuse, child pornography, probable cause correlation. That warrant contained almost identical sort of boilerplate to what this warrant, the first and second warrants here, but an interest in children, meaning maybe you're going to find evidence related to it on an electronic device. And the court rejected that it came from a postal inspector in that case, and the court rejected that boilerplate. The court has rejected that boilerplate two more times, both in John, rejected similar, just sort of blanket conclusions where they're not supported by the facts, as well as in Caesar, even where the court did find good faith on just wildly different facts from what we're dealing with here. Even in Caesar, footnote 12, the court still, after looking at studies that Congress had cited to and studies that the Sentencing Commission had done, which found a loose correlation and a note that the studies are mixed, still declined to find the sort of automatic probable cause that the government's asking for.
But Caesar, in the body of the Caesar opinion, the court did say that we can't ignore social science research and legal authority discussing the tendency of child sexual abusers to possess child pornography. And that's just, you know, part of one of the many observations underlying the good faith result in Caesar. So is your point here more that the affiant needed to really spell out like what in her specific training and experience led her to link indecent exposure to child pornography?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And she doesn't do that. I mean, that is one of our significant, there's certainly many, but that is one of our complaints with the warrant, is that the affiant does not describe any relevant experience of any kind. She starts with an experience section, essentially, I'm a state trooper. You know, I've attended various state trooper trainings. I've investigated certain crimes, none of which are the type of crimes alleged here. And I think that is a significant distinction from Caesar. Caesar was also a state trooper. That trooper did not have, or at least did not recite, extensive experience dealing with this type of crime. But that trooper at least cited extensive experience dealing with the sort of technological aspect of forensic evaluations of computers that is missing here. So there is an issue both with the experience that makes it very much like Zimmerman rather than Caesar, which still in a footnote says that the court is not just blanket accepting this sort of automatic probable cause link. And I really think that's important, because if this court looks at these warrants, the district court really read them together, which I think makes sense, because contrary to what the government has asserted, the trooper did not have the authority to search the devices from the first warrant. The first warrant was authority to seize device, to search the home, look for Mr. Kane, to arrest him, and to seize devices. The second warrant reveals that the trooper then did initially search some of the devices, because they're looking at his phone to see that he's monitoring where his wife is. They're looking at the computer to see that something has been ejected, even though they do not at that time have a search warrant that authorizes them to search any of these devices.
Well, I mean, I thought that the description of how the phone was seen was that it was there in the room. And so that when she came in, she saw the phone. It's not like she went around looking in drawers and discovered a phone.
Your Honor, we don't necessarily have a record on that, because this was fully four corners challenges to the warrants. So there's no testimony from the trooper as to how she ended up seeing what was on the phone or what was on the computer. Certainly, she reveals that she did look at the screens of the phone and the computer in order to add those things into the second warrant.
And do you have a position on, I mean, also if she's coming into the home and just happens to stumble into this long delay with the defendant answering the door and then having evidence that there's some kind of personal sexual activity going on. I mean, the circumstances don't change. I mean, add to kind of the atmospherics of like what might be reasonable for her to look at.
So, Your Honor, I think the question is not just sort of atmospherics. It's, is there reason to believe that he's looking at child pornography rather than
the government actually claims that that's not what she was looking for, that there is testimony from two separate children saying that there's been repeated indecent exposure. And that same individual has taken photographs of the children and sent the photographs to the parent. And so I understand the government's argument to be that they're putting those things together and saying maybe devices in the home used to take photographs will illuminate the indecent exposure that was taking place in the relationship with the children. Because we know, if you believe their allegations, there's indecent exposure. That's the claim. And then he definitely is taking pictures of the kids, which he has sort of himself admitted because he sent them. And that together is what leads to the warrant for the indecent exposure. You're adding in child pornography, but that's not the government's argument.
Your Honor, I think that is sort of an interesting hypothetical that the government has argued to what they might have been looking for that does not appear in the search warrant. And that is a significant flaw with a search warrant is there is no explanation as to what they are looking for, which is why the district court was able to readily and correctly conclude that what they were looking for, Your Honor, was child pornography. Because you have to read the two warrants together. The first one does not authorize the search of the devices. And the first warrant discusses both potentially the you know, people with a interest in children keep photos for sexual gratification. It's not talking about photos for access or geolocation data or interest in these particular children that the government has sort of added later in trying to rewrite what's in the actual affidavit. The other problem, and I think it's really the most glaring issue with the warrant, is the warrant is the affidavit for the first search warrant is 3 pages long. It has the same section copied and pasted 3 times about how people with photos can copy them to other devices. You know, word for word, the same language that suggests that they need to do this search of every device, not just, you know, a phone or a GoPro or any particular device, because someone would be able to copy the photos to a printer or a memory card or any other number of electronic devices, which really tells you that what they're looking for is child pornography, because there's no explanation for why someone with the legal photos and videos of children playing that the government already has, because they've already been sent to the mother of the children, would be engaged in this sort of like surreptitious activity of trying to hide it by storing it on the internal memory of a printer or a refrigerator or an Xbox, instead of the devices that the government has sort of added explanations for why they might have had probable cause for those devices.
Why wouldn't it be reasonable for the magistrate to believe that affiant was looking for additional non-pornographic photographs of victims 1 and 2 on the devices?
It just doesn't say that, Your Honor. It doesn't say what the affiant's doing. And so that's the real problem, is we have a warrant for the first that seizes every electronic device in Mr. Kane's home without any explanation. There's no recitation of experience. The crime under investigation is indecent assault, not indecent exposure, which is the wrong crime. The affiant then repeats this boilerplate 3 times about someone could be trying to hide it by transferring it to other devices. The affiant talks about how they need to do the search because these photos, which are legal photos, could potentially be used for sexual gratification. And so that is why the district court reasonably read what the warrant was really saying, because the warrant leaves everyone guessing, because it doesn't explain what it's actually for.
So what, in your understanding of the law, would have been adequate here? Because, you know, actually, when the warrant that was given by a magistrate judge was followed and pursued, lots of evidence of lots of crimes came into existence that now, you know, you're trying to sort of knock out on the insufficiency of the warrant. But what would have been sufficient? Because, I mean, the crimes seems like they existed. So if we're going to, you know, be in the Fourth Amendment violation, you know, fiction alternate where we can't look at any of that, what would have had to have been said for this to have constitutionally come in and been part of the case?
Your Honor, there are, the Fourth Amendment provides trade-offs. I mean, that is the Bill of Rights, is there are trade-offs in terms of limiting the government's ability sometimes to solve crimes and even serious crimes.
But that's not what I asked you, what would have been enough. So I'm asking.
This warrant does not contain, and the allegations that they had at the time do not give them enough to search electronic devices. That is the fundamental problem here.
The Fourth Amendment standard, as you point out, main values, probably, you know, reasonable search and seizures. I'm asking you, what would have made this reasonable? What exactly is the delta between what was done here and what needed to be done?
So I think there has to be some sort of link between the electronic devices and some sort of, and the sexual misconduct. So I think Caesar actually gives a pretty good example of that, in that Caesar was both accused of sexually abusing minors, but then at the same time, law enforcement receives a National Center for Missing and Exploited Children tip that Caesar is trying to buy like used children's underwear and swimsuits on eBay. He's having graphic conversations with the sellers of the clothing on eBay, you know, requesting samples of children wearing them where it doesn't amount to child pornography.
Basically here, there would have had to have been some kind of, somebody would have had to see or know that there were pictures, like the explicit pictures on the computer, to be able to search to see that there were explicit pictures on the computer.
I think there has to be something approaching that. I mean, Caesar didn't necessarily have explicit pictures, but there has to be some sort of allegation that electronics are being used to do this. And we don't have that here. I mean,
well, I think it's just a difference. The government, as I take their argument, and they can answer this, I guess, on rebuttal, is they are saying the cumulative nature of the fact that we know this gentleman was taking pictures of the children. And we also know that during those same visits, he was exposing themselves to the children, that it's a reasonable step to say something would have been going on potentially with computers and the children, because he likes taking pictures of them and he likes exposing himself to them. Therefore, let's see what other evidence or what evidence is on those screens.
Your Honor, I think Zimmerman and John both reject that hypothesis of there's some sort of abuse allegation, and so therefore we get to search all the computers. You know, that because Zimmerman was doing the same thing. You know, what Zimmerman was doing was far, far worse, where Zimmerman is accused both of in-person abuse, but showing pornography, including bestiality, to the children. But it wasn't child pornography. So this court said you can't make that leap.
Well, it's a little bit of a distinction here, because we actually have pictures of these particular children who are the victims.
And I think that's very important, is that we have them before they execute the warrant. And sort of the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is whether or not the search is reasonable. A search for things the government already has, is where it is this broad and this intrusive, with no limitation, no file limit, no temporal limitation.
Well, but I thought what the government was saying is, I thought the step they were making is pictures of the children, indecent exposure of the children. Let's see if there are pictures of the indecent exposure to the children, which would mean let's look at the devices. So the government doesn't have those pictures. Why wouldn't they be looking for those pictures as evidence? Because they know the allegation's been indecent exposure. They know this man likes to take pictures of the children. Explain to me why that's not a logical step, or at least a step that gets us under the good faith exception, to then look and see if there are pictures of the indecent exposure, because there are pictures of the non-criminal activity with the kids.
So, Your Honor, I think, one, that is not in the warrant. And two, that this court in Zimmerman and John rejected that sort of automatic leap.
I thought Zimmerman was saying you can't have generalized pictures and generalized criminal allegations and marry them. Here, there's like pictures and allegations with the same people.
So the pictures that are referenced in the warrant are pictures of the children playing. The children say he would take pictures sometimes, and then the mom says, yes, he would take pictures, and he sent them to me. So I don't think that contributes anything to the probable cause analysis of whether or not he's going to have child pornography, or we don't really...
The probable cause that maybe he's indecently exposing himself, because they've said he is.
So...
And if he's doing that, how do we know there aren't pictures? Maybe there are pictures of it.
I think that is the argument that Zimmerman rejected, Your Honor, that there's this sort of automatic jump to between allegations of abuse and a search for child pornography. And John was similar, where John wasn't necessarily for child pornography. There was sort of similar boilerplate in John of, you know, I believe, you know, the trooper or the agent puts, I believe that people with an interest in children keep evidence of those crimes on their devices. And the court still found that wasn't.
I guess what I'm saying is, and I take it your point is, well, it has to explicitly say this in the warrant. I just think the government's argument sounds to me is not just generally taking pictures safe pictures of these kids leads to child pornography. The argument would be these particular children who have had pictures taken of them are also saying they have been victims of indecent exposure. And therefore, let's see if there are pictures of that crime. So it's not generalized child porn. It's pictures of the crime that's been alleged, because we know one way of recording time with these children is taking pictures of them.
And Your Honor.
So you can analogize it to Zimmerman, but I think the government's saying it's distinct.
Your Honor, I think the children are not saying there was indecent exposure while he was taking pictures. And so certainly,
that would be the allegation that would need to be in the warrant.
That, if that were in the warrant, then that's a great search.
You know, if I could ask a couple questions here. You know, let me just start with a few facts that might exist in a hypothetical case. There's allegations of indecent exposure to minors, and those minors say that the person who indecently exposed himself to them was recording them at separate occasions. We'll just say completely separate occasions. Do you think that it would be relevant if there was a search of that person, the one who is alleged to have indecently exposed devices, just to say, look, we're looking for photos, and you find photos and you say, you know what, there was 2,000 photos on this device. 1,990 of them were of those two children. You know, five were of his wife and five were of vacation. You think just from that volume, speaking only in terms of circumstantial evidence, that shows an unnatural affinity or attraction to those children that you could say, when I'm going to build my case against this guy to say that he indecently exposed to them, I want to show that he was infatuated with them. In fact, we looked at his device. He had 2,000 images on it, and 1,990 of them were of these two children. A colossal multiplier compared with his recent vacation, compared with his wife. Don't you think, I know that's not what we have here, right? But don't you think in that instance, wouldn't that really strengthen a prosecutor's case to say, hey, this is the guy, you know, believe the children. I don't care if none of them are pornographic at all. It just leads to, what's his state of mind? Is it more likely than not now that he was indecently exposing himself to them? And gee, he sure seems to have an infatuation with them. And if that's the case, why isn't that in the realm of permissible for a warrant?
Your Honor, certainly that the government has argued that there are things that could have been found beyond child pornography that would have been relevant to proving their case. The problem with these warrants is that these are warrants for child pornography. They are not warrants for what Your Honor is suggesting.
The first one isn't necessary. The district court said it was, but you've also said that it doesn't say what it was. You say it's missing what exactly it was searching for. And so maybe the good faith exception does some work in filling that absence in. Possibly, but maybe also it could be that the search was just for this. We want to get a volume. We want to get a nature of the pictures. We want to know what type pictures he was taking of the children. You know, even if they're kind of, you know, not pornographic, are they the sort of things that you'd say, gee, only a person that was looking for arousal reasons would take this picture this way? If we don't know, and I think you're right, the warrant doesn't complete that thought. But isn't that still in the realm of kind of good faith forgiveness?
I think it's not good faith because it is a boilerplate warrant that does not explain what it is for. I mean, if that appeared in the warrant, then I think certainly there's a stronger argument for good faith. What the warrant does instead is repeats multiple paragraphs three times, doesn't provide experience, doesn't identify the actual crime under investigation, doesn't explain what the trooper is looking for. And so we are left in a situation now we are arguing in an appellate court, you know, what do we think the trooper might have been looking for under this warrant? And I think that is a serious problem with respect to particularity. I think it's a serious problem with respect to whether the warrant contains probable cause. And I think it's what makes it You know, we argued the district court didn't reach the issue, but we argued that it is a general warrant because it specifically says, you know, we're looking for photos of children, not just these children, that could be used for sexual gratification, even if they don't meet the definition of child
pornography. But that's what the first warrant says. The first warrant on page 50 says that there may be photographs and or videos of victim one and victim two on the aforementioned devices, and there is a specific list of devices, right? So they're looking for victim for photographs or videos of victims one and two. And I understand your argument is they're looking for pornographic materials, but it is quite particularized in terms of like who the subject matter pertains to and which devices.
The first warrant is more particularized in that it says we're going to take all the electronics, and then it defines various types of electronics. But the first warrant says we're going to take all the electronics. So it doesn't quite have the particularity problem that the second warrant has. The second warrant authorizes a search for children, photos of children that could be used for sexual gratification without describing what that means. And I think that raises the particularity problem that makes it a general warrant.
Okay. And I know Mr. Zosmer understood you to be making the general warrant argument. And within that, arguing about overbreadth, was your view that those were separate arguments?
A general warrant, the entire warrant is defective and everything must be suppressed. An overbroad warrant allows for severance. I do believe this is a general warrant, and I don't know how it can really be severed given the complete lack of you know, I think the court probably doesn't need to hear me say the same things again, but all the problems with the warrants, I don't know how you would even begin to do the severance analysis.
No, I have nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I want to clarify, I agree certainly with Judge Maska's suggestion that they could be looking for pictures of the indecent exposure. But Judge Phipps, I think broader focus is really correct. It's not only looking for photos of indecent exposure. It's looking for photos that illumine the relationship between this man and these two children. These are, as you know, the court knows, these are the most difficult, sensitive cases involving the most vulnerable victims in our community. And here we have a brave 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, and their parents who come forward, but you're still gonna have those challenges at trial of these young victims having to testify. What the police have to do in this situation is conduct a full investigation and gather all available evidence to find what shows, what pictures was he taking? How often was he spending time with them? What was the difference in how he interacted with other people? This is the most fundamental, appropriate investigation. Mr. Goldstein says, well, they had what they needed. No, they didn't. They needed to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt, not knowing that it would turn into an even more serious case, which is what happened. He states that this was a warrant for child pornography. He states it as simply an ipsa dixit. There is no way to just read this warrant and say, that's a warrant for child pornography. And if it was, there'd be no reason for her to go back. He argues for the first time that, oh, this was only a warrant to seize the devices, not look at them. No, it wasn't. This was a search warrant. They had the authority to search the devices. This is a standard state warrant that we've all seen many, many times. She went back because she needed authority, thought she needed authority to go further. I want to point out.
Just ask. Why don't you finish and then I'll.
I have a couple other points if the court has time, but I welcome the question.
Well, you can. Okay. Well, what I was going to ask, and what I would imagine the defense would be trying to just to make protect against is situations where there would be two bare allegations that then lead to private citizens, all of their devices being taken and searched. So could you articulate for us, and maybe this is not entirely fair because it's counterfactual, although I asked some similar things on the other side to opposing counsel, but what is it here that would be required or that's particularly getting us across the line, all the things? Because there's a lot. Would it be enough if there were just one child's allegation? Is it the combination of that and the photos? Is it the combination of the suspicious behavior at the house? It seems like you're arguing there's many, many factors here that can lead everyone to be sure that this case is not leading to just generally broad situations where a private citizen's devices can be taken and searched?
It's the combination of facts, and it leads actually into the points I was going to make. It's why Zimmerman and John have absolutely nothing to do with this case. Zimmerman is a case in which all of the abuse takes place outside the home. And there's an assertion that one time, 9 months earlier, the gentleman showed adult pornography to one person. There's no evidence of abuse in the home. There's no evidence of pornography in the home. Same thing in John. The abuse takes place on field trips, not in the man's home. Here, we have both. We have abuse in the home, and we have photographs being taken of the victims in the home. When you look at the combination of factors, there's clearly probable cause to further that investigation regarding those two specific victims. And then when you find additional suspicion that he's viewing child pornography on the computer, you come back, you get a second warrant, you broaden the scope of it. And by the way, he mentioned they have everything they needed. No, they didn't. We know that he sent photos to the mother, but the child said that there was this GoPro video. She was not sent the GoPro video. So of course they're looking for that and looking for any other evidence that corroborates what she has to say. Again, you just have this very thorough professional investigation here. I haven't even mentioned the review by the district attorney of each of these of submissions, which the Supreme Court tells us is relevant to good faith. But we just have a very clear showing of both probable cause and good faith. I appreciate Your Honor's review of the matter, unless there are further questions. Thank you.
Nothing from Judge Pitts?
Nope, thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you to both counsel, and the case is submitted.